Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to this edition of News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. It's been an extremely busy first year and a half on the job for North Carolina Attorney General Josh Stein, whether it's hauling predatory corporate outlaws into court, joining with other attorneys general around the nation to challenge a host of rogue Trump administration policies, or more recently, fighting for accurate and truthful labels next to the constitutional amendments that will appear on North Carolina's November ballot. Stein has regularly been in the center of the action. Recently, the AG joined us by phone as he traveled between events during a typically hectic workday. Well, Attorney General Josh Stein, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be here, Rob.
It's been an interesting time in your new job, not so new anymore, over a year and a half as the state's attorney general. Talk to us about your general impressions of being in such an important statewide leadership position in such a contentious political times.
I love the job. I love it because what I get to do as attorney general is go to work with wonderful colleagues. And what we do is protect the people of North Carolina. We do that in a whole bunch of ways. We protect folks from crime, from consumer fraud. We protect the taxpayers from being defrauded. We protect the environment. We protect folks' basic rights, like their right to vote. And so doing that work and knowing that you're trying to make a difference in people's lives is incredibly rewarding. Now, we do live in a very strange political time, and I might choose to have different political times, but we don't choose the times in which we live. And so I just go to work every day and try to help people. That's what I get to do, and I love it.
Well, we thank you for that. Speaking of the strange times, one of the big news items in North Carolina right now, of course, is the fact that we're going to have a slate of six constitutional amendments on the November ballot. You are one of three members of a Constitutional Amendments Publication Commission that was charged with writing the captions for these ballot amendments. There's been a special session of the General Assembly recently in an effort to change that. The commission had a brief meeting in recent days. Talk to us about sort of your take on where things stand with respect to the constitutional amendments and your role in that.
What you just said accurately describes the situation. There's a commission on which I serve. The chair is Secretary of State Elaine Marshall. And then the legislative officer, Paul Coble, is the third member. And this is a longstanding commission whose duty is to write an explanation of what any constitutional amendment does. We also had a duty to write a caption that would appear on the ballot along with the language that the voters will be voting on. And the legislature has, when in a special session, changed the law to take away our ability to write a caption because they don't want voters to see how we would explain what the amendment does. I've read these amendments incredibly closely because of this job that I have. And I will do, and Secretary Marshall and Mr. Coble, we will do a conscientious and straight up explanation of what the amendments do. And I have absolute faith in the voters to make a decision on how they want to structure their government if the voters actually know what the choices are. And what I've come to conclude is that the language that the voters will be voting on do not reflect what the consequence of the amendment will actually be if enacted. So it would be like wanting to get a birthday cake for your spouse, going online, seeing a picture of this incredibly intricate cake with a beautiful, elaborate description of how that cake is going to look like, and then you open the box and it's a box of cat food. There's just no relationship between the words that what people will be voting on and what the amendments actually do. And I'm deeply troubled by that.
It is a very worrisome development. And we recognize there's only so much you can do officially in your role with this commission to address that issue. But we sure hope that in the next few months that there'll be a concerted effort by all kinds of officials, both elected and non-elected, to let people know what the heck these amendments really do.
The two that are most deceptive, one has to do with appointment of boards and commissions, and the other has to do with appointments of judges to vacancies. If these amendments are enacted, it will be the most dramatic, radical restructuring of power and government since the Civil War in 150 years. And it will be taking power away from voters and giving it to a single branch of government, the legislature. We have multiple branches of power, the judicial, the executive, and the legislative branch, we separate that power so there are checks and balances on each other so that no one branch has too much power. And everybody gets to vote for the governor, but not everybody votes for the leader of the House or the leader of the Senate. And so it's taking power away from the voters and giving this power to the legislature. And again, if that's what the voters want to do, if they want to have a very powerful legislative branch, then they can do that. But that's not what the amendments say on the ballot.
There's an argument to be made, I think, that all the amendments are somewhat deceptive and indeed were passed in a way that was clearly lacked process and sort of rushed through the General Assembly in the final days of the 2018 session. So it's an issue, I think, that will remain front and center in North Carolina for the remainder of 2018. But speaking of elections, I want to ask you about this whole issue of cybersecurity in elections, the fact that there's been real questions in recent months and years, really now, whether American elections are safe, whether we are having genuine interference by foreign powers. I know, obviously, there's been a lot of action on this at the national level. You've joined in with some efforts to urge Congress to do the right thing. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, first of all, this is a real issue. We have to have faith in the mechanics of our democracy, the administration of our elections, in order to believe the results. And so the risks that foreign interference will exist, we know it already has. We don't know that it impacted the outcome in terms of changing people's votes. You know, there's no evidence of that. But there is direct evidence that different states were hacked by the Russians and that different vendors that provide elections administration software to states were hacked in 2016. And so I've not only written Congress, as you've mentioned, urging for greater work on their side, but also I've written the Department of Homeland Security a couple of times. I represent the State Board of Elections and have had repeated interactions with them about what can we be doing here in North Carolina to maximize our confidence that we're going to be immune from outside attack. And I have faith and belief that the State Board of Elections is doing everything in their power to make sure it doesn't happen here. Can I say with 100% certainty that we're unhackable? I can't. But, you know, the Russians hacked the NSA, and they have the best cybersecurity defenses in the world. And so we just have to do everything we can, and we will continue to do everything we can. And folks need to understand that everybody who's got a hand in this recognizes this issue and is dedicated to trying to address it.
There's so many issues in which the Attorney General of North Carolina is involved in protecting average North Carolinians, consumers, from predations of corporations and from bad actors in the market. One issue that you've been especially outspoken on in this regard is opioids and the issue of this horrible affliction of opioid epidemic that's plaguing our state, and the fact that some of the companies that manufacture these products have clearly taken advantage of the situation to sell and make money, even when they knew that they were flooding the market with products that were being used in a dangerous way. Can you talk to us about what's going on there?
Absolutely. And it's been my top policy priority as Attorney General for the last year and a half, is confronting this opioid epidemic, because it is killing people. It kills 4 people every day to an overdose. And it's destroying families, because there are many more people who are struggling with addiction, and it is all-consuming. It takes over people's lives. If you're a parent or a sibling or a friend or loved one, the pain is incalculable. So we are working on it, and we've made progress. It's over-prescribing, which has been the primary driver of this crisis. It historically has been a crisis that originates through these prescription painkillers. And by reducing overprescribing, we'll reduce the number of people who become addicted. We're going to soon embark on a public education campaign on this so that people have a better understanding. Everyone's heard of opioids, but they don't always understand the way the problem arises. On the enforcement side, I've passed a couple laws to give law enforcement more power to go after the drug traffickers and drug rings that are making money off of people's addiction. I'm also working with law enforcement on a whole bunch of really interesting innovations about trying to get people who are sick with addiction, substance use disorder, out of the criminal justice system and into the healthcare system. Because for most of these people, their criminality is their drug use. And if we can help them overcome their addiction, they will cease to be criminals, which enhances everybody's public safety. So there's great work going on in that regard, too. But we have got to hold the drug companies accountable, too. And that was your question. These folks made billions and billions and billions of dollars at the same time that millions of people were becoming addicted to their pills. And I have sued Purdue Pharma, which is the leading manufacturer of opioids. And I've sued Insys, another manufacturer of opioids. And I'm helping to lead a multi-state of about 40 states, Democrat and Republican. This is absolutely a bipartisan issue, to look at the other manufacturers and the drug distributors. And if we conclude that they also acted in an unlawful way, I will hold them accountable just the same way I've held the other two companies accountable.
We appreciate all your efforts. People should know that your background is as a consumer advocate. You worked in the Attorney General's office leading the Consumer Protection Division. There's so many areas in which the Attorney General's office speaks up for North Carolina consumers, from predatory lending to environmental protection. You've talked about opioids. If people want to, they can look up the Attorney General's office online. There is a way for folks to submit complaints, right, if they have complaints about consumer
issues?
Contact your office.
We get tens of thousands of complaints a year, and we can oftentimes help folks mediate when they have an issue. And it doesn't even have to be some criminal fraudster.
Right.
If your telephone company or your insurance company or some company that you have, your bank, you know, you have a normal interaction with them and they're just not listening to you and doing something wrong, file a complaint on our website and we will intervene with the company and try to get a resolution that can help you.
Attorney General Josh Stein, thanks so much for being with us. Please keep up the good work. We'll do this again real soon, I hope.
Thank you, Rob.
Coming up next, one of North Carolina's leading civil rights leaders talks about his efforts to rein in what many see as an out-of-control state legislature. Stay with us.